Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am profoundly and deeply grateful you chose to be with me on this eighth day of November 2020. Well, I am recording this late in October, so I don't know at this point who won the election. I want you to understand that. And the reason I bring that up to you is because my comments about what people are going through at this period of time may not seem current, but actually they are. And if we have avoided one disaster, I guarantee you there will be another. As this world drones on in the whole idea of its DNA, its genetics, its physicality, we miss the meaning of our life and the significance of it because we're always in our own life mulling over and droning over the same old problems within ourselves. We are the issue. Our candidates, our government, people in the world, it's all due to us. We as individuals, who we are, what we've become, what we've allowed ourselves to become. And we all have to take a deep look. Now, I don't know who's president right now. Maybe it hasn't been decided. I don't know. But this radio program, this offering is to help you understand maybe a little bit of the bigger picture. And I want to thank the people who wrote in and asked these questions. I'm always deeply moved, and I mean deeply moved by the questions that I get. I am surprised, to be honest with you, at their candor. I'm surprised that they take the time and bother to do it. So please understand, this is a rare honor on my part to be able to answer these questions. And I hope that in some way they ring true within you. You find your own deepened, profound answers to your life in your own way. That would be really lovely, and I would consider that an honor. First question comes from Raymond. He lives, he said, in the Midwest. That's all he'll tell me. I don't have anyone who would go after you, all of you. I want you to understand that I don't know what the reluctance is to tell me where you live or where this is coming from, but whatever. I find myself, says Raymond, hating more than I ever thought possible from myself. How did I get like this? I think that this election has caused me great anxiety, and I feel hatred towards the people, and then he puts Trump, that caused me this suffering. Period. Raymond. Raymond, people don't cause me to hate. Situations in the world don't cause me to hate. What causes me to hate is my succumbing to my DNA and my genetic nature. When I succumb to my body and its physicality, and I enact the psychology that my body and my emotionality belong to, which is genetic disposition and, of course, DNA, the will to survive, I come to a place where I divide them and me. I think them is the problem and me is the victim, or me is the answer, whatever it is that I want to do. And as long as I continue to live in this fashion and in this way, from the DNA, from the physicality of me, the psychology of me, my my way of living will be in direct proportion to my survival, my liking and disliking. My pathology, mentally and emotionally, will come to bear its arms against those who I deem a threat to my life, to my well-being. So when we take a deep and profound look at our lives and the meaning of our lives and what goes on in the meaning of our lives, we find that the only meaning there can be is in surrounding ourselves or circling the wagons around our survival, and anyone who gets in the seems to get in the way or does get in the way, anyone who protracts any kind of for or against me becomes either my friend or my enemy. And it all depends on how I want to look at everything and how I believe everything works in my own life. I think we've gone way past our own civil war. Everybody needs to have some kind of inner civil war going on. And I think we've gone past that, and we've made it a biological war. We've made it a sociological war. We've made it a war of society, of culture. Our whole culture has been changed. Not that it was good in the first place, believe me, but our whole culture has changed to war and hating. What I loved about your email to me is how you were upset that you found yourself hating so much and becoming a hater. I really understand that. But I want you to understand, Raymond, everyone to some degree or another is a hater. I have my hater in me, deep inside me. And the object of the game is to watch it, to see how it acts and reacts, but not to allow myself to act and react to whatever it is doing and it is saying and it is going through. I just don't get involved in it. Now, if you get involved in your hater, it will beat you. It really will. It will take away everything that is meaningful in your life. It will cause you tremendous pain and sorrow. It will eventually catch up to the more intimate parts of your life where you have difficulty with people that are in your family or people that you love. It will always get to getting in us. So if you are a person who wants to truly transcend all of this, you're going to have to go to that place inside of you where you're more objective about your own emotionality. And you have to understand what triggers that emotionality and how it takes sides. And it's really interesting if you look at it from the perspective of self-observation, which most people, quite frankly, Raymond, will not do. And I find cannot do because they're too initiated in their emotionality, too invested in it. They think that whatever they emotionally feel is true, or whatever they emotionally feel is the absolute for their life. I mean, the total absolute. So if you feel that your emotions are essential, if you feel that your ideals are important, if you emotionally are attached to outcome, you're going to miss this whole thing. You say you never thought you'd be like this. Well, how could you not? Did you think that because you were living maybe in a certain period of time in your life where the dictates of hate and anger weren't prevalent in you? We all have the seed of tremendous self-destruction within us. It is the emperor of all malice that lives within us. This emperor was and is created by a latent, unconscious disturbance, mental and emotional disturbance. In other words, I'm saying all of us who live by the sword and are willing to die by the sword are mentally ill. There's mental illness in all of us. This mental illness that we all have to a certain degree is what is the norm of society, is actually become the culture of the American way of life. So we're always looking for the biggest, strongest, bestest person, organization, whatever, to try to defend against our anger, our fear, and our self-hatred. You're really fighting your own self-hatred, Raymond. It isn't Trump. It isn't Biden. It isn't, I don't know who's president right now, but it isn't any of these people. It isn't government. It is my own self-hatred that I am fighting against because I refuse to let love live me. I refuse to find love. In fact, most people just don't have the mental acuity to stand back and observe and watch and see who and what they really are. We miss. And because we miss, and because we want to miss, and we don't really want to see the way, the truth, and the light, we find ourselves in this fog of thinking. And we live in it with pride. We live in it with self-righteousness because we think that in doing these two things, we are in self-preservation. And that's the only thing that really matters to people, Raymond, is self-preservation. It's all that matters. And if you can watch, nonpartisanly, if you can just observe, you will see everything is about defending your ego, your position in this world, in society. And you want to be important. You want some kind of authority. And in living in such a manner, in such a way, you will defeat yourself because it is all about our own self-hatred. It has nothing to do with government or people. It's about my relationship with my heart. And if I have no relationship with the heart, the authentic heart, not the human heart, well, there are going to be great difficulties. Think about it. Raymond, I hope that helps you. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's hard for people to understand. We only see others as we see ourselves, as we experience ourselves. That's the only way to understand why we hate and why we fear, and we just don't want to get involved in that. Jeff, he is the next question from Florida. He tells me, politicians are petty, religion is ridiculous. Where is the reality that one can believe in, Jeff? Boy, Jeff, that was a great email. There was much more to the email than that, but I enjoyed your email, and I want to thank you for taking the time to clarify your ideas and everything. Yes, politics are about human pettiness. You're right. And lying has been taken to a brand new level in this country, in our world. And it doesn't matter that we lie. It just matters, what do you believe my lie? And if you don't, then what I do is I ridicule you until you, or gaslight you, as they like to say, to believe in the idea that you're wrong and you're stupid for not believing what I'm lying about. And that's really politics. Religion, it's about spreading myths and rumors about life not having the truth. Because the truth be known would undo that primitive need for fear. I want to say this to you, Jeff, and maybe this might be a good premise to help you with. Everything in our world is about fear. Everything. There isn't anything that fear doesn't touch in our life and is not the author thereof. Religion is about fear. Fear of God, fear of retribution, fear, especially if you're prone to being, hysterical and superstitious. And if you get into that category, you're going to be religious. But you really do have to understand that fear rules the roost here on this planet, in this world. And if you don't understand that, if that isn't clear to you, that pungent truth will not be able to help you. If you see it for what it is, your fear, and you see what you're afraid of and about, then you have a chance to transcend. You will find that your human body will never, never give up fear. Never. It just won't do it. And why? Because it's obstinate. At this point, you will find your mind and your fears are obstinate. They just want to challenge and make problems. They are, both of them, uniting in this whole idea of the emperor of all malice. And they've come together to live and coexist with each other in the obstinance of being unkind. No one tells me what to do. I don't wear a mask, you know, screw you kind of thing. We really do have a lot of problems personally with our ego. And the emperor that we bow down to, which we see as our persona, as our basic, you know, belief as a person, the core of us, and the rhetoric that it likes to offer to any given argument to sustain its stature in our life, this idea of malice. No one screws with me. No one tells me what to do. And then we get into all of this ugliness. As long as we live in that kind of mentality, that kind of emotionality, we're always going to be looking for a fight. And I find this with a lot of people when I'm teaching, and I am teaching them love. I'm teaching them how to come to love. They're obstinate about it. They dislike it because we've had our fill of hate and fear, and we like it. You really have to admit, Jeff, if you're going to do any kind of serious work, how much you love to hate and how your mind is always looking for something to oppose you or your beliefs or your attitudes. You always have to have something to hate. If you don't, you will find your mind curiously sitting there trying to find fault with your neighbor, with your friend, with a colleague, with whomever. Because you need to hate. It has to be for or against. If you want to, so to speak, destroy your thinking a little bit and come into clarity and wisdom, you have to give up the fight for right. You have to give up looking for what you think is right so you can hate. The mind, the emperor of all malice, who our minds basically belong to in a general theme, needs that kind of duality to create thought. Now, I don't know about you, but that has never been good with me. And we have a lot of people who hate us for what we do. I have a lot of people in my own life that hate me very much for, you know, teaching the way. They don't like that. They don't think it fits the dogma of and the criteria of my ordination and things like that. They have fought me all the way. I never, ever raise a finger towards them. I really don't. So when you start to understand all of this and the mental and emotional depravity of being that ill, all of us, me included, you have to look at it and say, I can't trust, in my case, the Gregory with my life. I have to entrust my life with something more profound. Love, kindness, all the boring things that most people just don't want to be involved in. Hope that helps you. Probably not, but I hope it does. Please forgive me. Namaste. A lot of my answers, they just don't coordinate with our social and biological existence. If I seem condescending on that, I want you to forgive me, but understand why. Because it is not about hate in this world. It is about love. It really is. Last question. I'm running out of time. This is from Ryan in Topeka, Kansas. Is love possible in this kind of world? I think I'm giving up, Ryan. Ryan, in this world, love is impossible. Love is not of this world. Love is of your inner life, your inner state. If you make this world your inner state, then you're sunk before you even get started. You miss. You don't understand. I've had students who have sat with me in retreats and workshops for years and did not understand at all, because they tuned me out, that all of our life is based in love. Is love possible in the world? No. It will never be possible in the world. The question is love possible in me, in thee? Can we let love live us? Can we find that love within us? It's staring us in the face. And the only thing that keeps us from really accentuating this love is my lack of kindness and compassion towards my enemy. That is the basic causation of life in me. If I am fighting my enemy, and everybody has enemies, everybody, Jesus, Buddha, everybody had enemies. You can't be in this world without an enemy. You have to have them, because that's the way of this world. But the way the world is does not necessarily have to dictate the way of life. If you want your life to have meaning and significance, you have to put away your hatred, your tendency for it. I have to put away mine. And we have to come to the point of life, which is love. This love is to listen to that still, small voice within us. It is to come to the place of the solidarity of silence and to live in that solidarity in the most simplistic way possible. And should you be able to do that, should you be willing of that, you're going to find your life unfolds. Instead of being the continuum of hate and fear, love would unfold and keep unfolding over and over and over again until your life is a matter of blooming in love rather than the systemic hatred that we all are a part of in our human form and trying to make right out of hate. That is where we go wrong. That is why we have wars, and that is why everything appears to be as it appears to be. I'm out of here. Ryan, thank you for your beautiful question. Forgive me, eh? Namaste. Well, there's another week. I hope it helped. I really do. And we'll be back with you next week. Have a beautiful weekend, and please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.